This has been a great morning, somebody.
Yeah.
Isn't that wonderful? But you need to change the name. I asked Billy, what do you call this thing? Day event. You can't really brand day event. You know what? You got to. I'm a marketer, kind of need a name for something, but in brand. So you say, you're coming to whatever you want to call it, but a day event. It's 18 years of a day. Isn't that wonderful? Super successful, and I love it. And Alex, you could have done a wonderful job. One more time for those ladies. Well, thank you for asking. My name is John Allred, and I am an alcoholic. And by the grace of God and the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, I have not had a drink of alcohol or a mood altering drug since October 7th, 1981.
Whoa.
And I'm very grateful for that. Now, that does not make you an old timer. I'm going to lay that right at you. You know, they used to have old timers in AA, you know, and at that time I came in the 80s. If you have 20 years, you were an old timer.
Yeah.
You know? And I was doing a podcast a while ago, and the guy doing the podcast, he asked me, he said, what's the biggest change you've seen in AA, you know, in 40 years? And without a doubt, it's the average age of the person coming in. You know, it used to be 40. When I came in the average age, I was 30, and I was young. The average age was 40. In fact, I couldn't get into a halfway house because the guy said, well, you have to be 40 to get in here. Jesus, if I got to stay out here 10 more years and come see you if I'm alive. So there's a lot of young kids. I sponsored a guy, came in when he was 15. He's got 33 years sober. He's 30, he's 48. You know? Unbelievable how that works. Another guy I sponsored came in when he was 19. You were 19 when you came in there. Wally just picked up his 40-year chip, and he's got less than 50 years of age, you know? It's unbelievable. Less than 60 years of age, because you can't remember when I was 18. Get my mouth right. So if you have a question about whether a guy's an old-timer or a long-timer, they call them long-timers. That's the new terminology, you know, or being politically correct. He's a long-timer. You want to know that if you're a long timer or an old timer, very simple. Saturday night, you're getting ready for bed about the same time you used to be getting ready to go out.
Yeah.
You're an old timer. Sunday morning, you're getting up about the same time you used to be getting in.
Yeah.
You're an old timer. And for sure, you guys, if your drug of choice, pay attention, if your drug of choice is Viagra, you're an old timer. For you ladies out there, I'm gonna tell you, if your sex inventory has become your gratitude list, you're an old timer.
That's pretty simple. Pretty simple.
I'm kidding. I go to a group. They call it the North Star group, but I call it Jurassic Park. Because they're all old people in there, you know? The average guy, in fact, 90% of the people who go to that meeting have sobriety dates in the 60s, 70s, or early 80s. You know? I'm a short timer in there, you know, 40 years. They got a lot of time in there, and it's a wonderful group. And this is a wonderful group you got here on this ticket. Last time we had a great night. We got to go to they caught the cemetery, the graveyard group. Instead of church, we got a graveyard around it. You know, it was a fun meeting. We did that, and this has been a great time, and I've just thoroughly enjoyed it all. And, you know, we're just different. Alcoholics are just different. We tolerate different levels of, and we don't tolerate. A lot of times people tolerate stuff, we don't tolerate that. Other stuff they don't tolerate, we tolerate. You know, we just tolerate. And just be mind-blowing what happens on that. I was with the last conference before the pandemic shut everything down. I was in Mississippi with Don M. And, you know, from Louisville. Great guy, everyone knows Don. And non-talk Friday night. I was going to speak Saturday night. And Saturday afternoon, they had us do a workshop. They asked me and Don to do this workshop. Okay, Don was, at that time, Don was like 74. I was like 68. Between the two of us, we had somewhere between 10 and 12 marriages. Depends on how you count. That's what Don always says. Right, depends on how you count. Get this, they asked us to do a workshop on relationships. And we did a good job. They don't ask to do that at church. No, they don't ask to do that at church. You know? Just amazing. You ever see that? We just tolerate stuff, you know, and we learn from it, and it's great. And you'll do that Monday. Monday, you go to work Monday, say, have a good weekend. Had a great weekend. Oh, good. Put you well, you know, I'm in there. I went to, you wouldn't believe it, man. I had a guy there who was telling a story, a couple guys. They were doing real good, and then they got drunk. They lost their house, lost their job, lost their business, had their car repossessed, wife divorced, and lost the kids. Kept getting in trouble, going to jail, ended up in the state penitentiary. God, it was great.
Rupert,
you active in that deal? Oh, yeah, very active. Got a sponsor and everything. Who's your sponsor? Can't tell you. Anonymous program, you know. But a lot like the guy that talked. He was doing good, and then he got drunk. He got drunk, lost his wife, lost his family, lost his house, lost his business, had his car repossessed, ended up in the state penitentiary, got out, never could get sober, finally ended up out of state mental hospital. That's my sponsor. And I listen to every word he says. I think I heard you're listening to it. They look at us like we're nuts. You're really talking about that guy? Just nuts, you know? But that's the way it is. Because I like, see, here's the problem with alcoholism. I like to drink. I love to drink. And I'm drinking, and I just, people are telling me, hey, you know, slow down. Pace yourself. Yeah. That makes no sense whatsoever. Pace yourself. Take your time. This isn't a race. You know, just have a little drink, get a little buzz, and drink it, have an order of water. And then drink water, and then have another drink, you know? Never could do that. I never could do that. You know, I like to drink to get drunk. That's what I do. I drink to get drunk. I love to drink to get drunk. And they say, well, you're an alcoholic. Soon they told me I'm an alcoholic. I don't know, I'm not an alcoholic. You know, so I say, what's an alcoholic? How do you know you're alcoholic? That was one of my arguments. How do you know that? How do you know I'm an alcoholic? What is an alcoholic? John, it's a disease. Okay, fine. Let's go to the doctor. Well, we really can't do that. We got a disease. We're not going to go to the doctor. Okay, I gotcha. How do you know? We can't go to get an MRI, blood, you know, so a CAT scan, see if we're got this disease. No, can't do any blood analysis. No, can't do any. But how do you know you're an alcoholic? Well, yeah, here's the deal. Y'all want me to quit drinking. So think about this. What happens 20 years from now, I find out I'm not an alcoholic. I've blown 20 years of drinking. Not going to take that kind of risk. It's not taking that kind of risk. And so they say, well, you drink too much. So they told me I drank too much. I know I'm not an alcoholic. Because I never drank too much in my life. But I'll tell you a little secret. There's not an alcoholic in this room today that ever drank too much. It's impossible to do that if you're alcoholic. See, I am an alcoholic, not because I drank too much. I'm an alcoholic because I couldn't drink enough. You ever drink enough? See, normal drinkers, got any Al-Anons in here? I know we got some Al-Anons in here. Yeah, that's too bad. I didn't need to be here. Normal drinkers can drink enough. And so occasionally, but not very often, they might drink too much. But if you're an alcoholic, like I'm an alcoholic, and you can't drink enough, it's impossible to drink enough. In fact, when I drink, it's amazing. It's when I drink, it's like a little bomb explodes inside me and fills every empty pore I got. And I am happy, joyous, and free. You want me to quit? Why would you quit? Let me tell you what happens when I'm not drinking. When I'm drinking, I'm driven by 100 forms of fear, and I am restless, irritable, and discontent when I'm not drinking. When I'm drinking, I'm okay. In fact, I tell you, when I first came into AA, again, as motivation, I think it's going to excite me to come back. Never get to sat down and got the big book out and they read me the promise. You read the promises tonight? This afternoon? They read me the promises in the big book about Alcoholics Anonymous. Going to be motivating. I read that and I thought, oh, that's it? Wow. You want me to quit drinking? That's what I get? Oh my gosh, you steal my beating hearts. How exciting is that? What I really want is, you promised me that I get my job back, I get my wife back, get my money back, erase my police record, you get that expunged. Those are promises that I think you gotta make. You gotta quit drinking. Let's negotiate this, you know? Now, here's the reality. Took me years to learn this. My whole life, I insisted on having those promises. I will do anything to get them. I gotta have them. I wanna have them. I will get them at any cost. Alcohol gave me those promises. You go share one of those promises. And I don't know about you, but after that very first drink, promise one, I began to know a new freedom and new happiness. After two or three drinks, I don't know about you, but that fear of financial insecurity just kind of slips away. Hell, I don't need money, I got checks. We're okay. After three or four drinks, I actually had an intuitive thought how to handle situations that were bad for me. Can you help me report that? After 8 or 9 drinks, I don't know about you, but I began to comprehend the meaning of serenity. And after a dozen drinks or so, I don't know about you, but it became real clear, alcohol is no real what I can't do for myself. And you want me to quit. Now you can go through one of those promises, and that's what alcohol did for you. Okay? And here's the reality. This is important. If I don't find a recovery program that's going to give me those promises without drinking, since alcohol gave them to me, I'm going to go drink to get them. So I have to have a program that's going to give me those promises without drinking. The only program I know that does that is the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And they don't come until after step 9, which means you got to work the steps. So you can jack around that all you want. You can attend all the AA meetings you want to attend. You can talk to your sponsor all you want to talk to your sponsor. You can go pray to God all you want to pray to God. But if you're not working the steps, I'm going to promise you the clock is ticking. Because the time will come when you need those promises. And you're going to go drink together. It's that simple. You're going to go drink together. I didn't know any of that then. All I know is that, you know, it ain't working. You know, if you want me to quit? No, I'm not quitting. I'm not quitting at all, you know? And I defended my right to drink until I started down. You know how I like to relocate? I relocated because the problem I had, I knew I had a problem. I'm living in Utah. Utah's at a high altitude. Y'all see the Winter Olympics? Scientific fact, people live at high altitudes for prolonged periods of time actually have thinner blood than people that live at low altitudes. Well, I've been living in Utah my whole life. I got to have thin blood. You party hard on thin blood, you have a problem. What I need to do is get to sea level. Thicken up my blood a little bit, I'd be okay. I need thick blood. So I call a buddy that's in Seattle, come back to the problems. He said, come up here, put your life back together. So I moved to Seattle. Wasn't doing anything in Seattle, just doing a little drinking, working on thickening up my blood. When you're in that condition, the next logical thing you want to do, y'all know, I don't need to tell you this, y'all know, the next logical thing you want to do when you're in that condition, hell, you're going to want to gamble. Best time to gamble is when you're unemployed. So I started playing poker up there, finally moved, sort of run down to Nevada, playing the casinos, and I thought, who am I kidding? I'm just going to move to Nevada. That's Lord Lucia. You get thick blood in the back. Moved down to Las Vegas, bounced around, ended up in Reno, Tahoe area. Wasn't doing anything, just go drinking, playing a little poker, working, fitting up my blood. Buddy of mine called from Salt Lake, invited me to come over. Shouldn't have gone. Went over to Salt Lake. And here's what happens. You know? If we're going to get sober, it's going to take a miracle. It's going to flat take a miracle. And there's no way to explain a miracle. If you could explain a miracle, it wouldn't be a miracle, would it? The fact you can't explain what happened is what makes it a miracle. Best way to realize that is to, now there are two parts to every miracle, by the way. We all only talk about one part. That's God's part. But there are two parts. That's why one of the things we always hear in AA is there but for the grace of God. Right? I don't know if that's true or not. If it's only by the grace of God that I'm sober, that means I got grace and that drunk still out there didn't. Why? God loves me more than him? Huh. So maybe something else. There's something else. The miracles are going to happen. We depend on them. We have to have them. We have had them. And the first miracle is what I'm going to tell you about was my miracle of that moment of clarity when you know the deed is up. That divine moment of clarity. And you can't explain it because you can't explain a miracle. You think what would happen. And there are two parts to it. There's God's part, and then there's my part. We always talk about God's part. We never talk about my part. But there are always two parts to the miracle. Think about this. The most famous miracle of all time. Everybody knows about this miracle. Jews know about it. Christians know about it. Muslims know about it. Everybody knows about this great miracle of parting the Red Sea, right? Moses got children of Israel that helped cast you down in Egypt for 247 years. A lot of people didn't know that, right? But Moses, the great deliverer, is going to come along and take you back to the promised land. Y'all see that movie? I know you didn't read the book. So Moses is going to come along and take you back to the promised land. You get to the Red Sea. We don't know how to cross the Red Sea. They're talking about it. We're going to walk around it. We're going to build a boat. How are we going to cross this Red Sea? They don't know how to cross the Red Sea. People come and say, Pharaoh's changed his mind. He's coming to get us. What are we going to do? And God parts the Red Sea. That's God's part of the miracle. But you know what? Two parts. The children of Israel had to walk through the Red Sea. Someone didn't want to go. Can you imagine the fear? All of a sudden, that Red Sea parts. It's stacked up hundreds of feet high. And Moses says, come on, let's go. You go first. Some of them didn't want to go. They said that. And if you read the book, you'll tell. They want to go back. They said, I'm going to go back to Egypt and walk through that thing. That's terrible. Scary as hell. You know? But the children of Israel had to walk through the Red Sea. If they don't walk through the Red Sea, there's no miracle. We don't talk about it today. In your sobriety, you're going to have a lot of Red Seas to walk through. Don't turn your back on the miracle. Because the miracle is that moment of clarity, which is divine intervention when you know the gig is up. That's the miracle. Don't turn your back on that. And the first miracle, you're going to have a lot of miracles as you walk through the Red Sea. And you won't know about it until you walk through the Red Sea. And I went over to Utah to this party, birthday party. Met a gal at the bar. Beautiful gal, they're always there waiting for me. She wanted to go out Saturday. I want to take out Saturday. She couldn't go out Saturday or Sunday. I stayed till Monday. Supposed to go home Sunday. Should have gone home Sunday. Stay till Monday. We go out Monday. That Monday was October 6, 1981. We go out to the, and she said, you know, I'm invited her to go to dinner. Well, you know that a problem when you're invited to dinner and then they really want to eat. Because I never eat when I drink, you know, so that's silly. But she's eating, I'm drinking. But I'm a gentleman, so we're going to order me a whiskey or her glass of wine. Well, the woman ain't keeping up. She's busy. The wine's stacking up. Now, I got to bring her whiskey, drink her wine. It's just a bad deal. You know? Finally, she said, take me home. She'd no fun that night. I took her home, brought 10:30 at night. Went over to Price's house. Knocked on. He said, why you had a date? So that damn woman walked in. She said, she's like, come on, so I bought a gallon. So I walked in there with this wine. We drank that wine October 6, 1981. And now tomorrow, October 7th, Tuesday, 1981, we're going to hit it one more time. Then I got to leave. I got to get back. have to drink, I'm getting in trouble. I got to back a little out from drinking. So we go out Tuesday, October 7, 1981. Went to the fast show at the Hilton. I remember the fast show, and then I blacked out. I blacked out a lot. Somebody said, "You black out every time you drank? How do you know?" Some blackouts will scare, some aren't too bad. Two factors determine how scared a blackout is. First factor is how long you blacked out. The longer you blacked out, the more scared you are. Second factor is, what are you doing when you come out of your blackout? That's the scary factor a lot. I wasn't blacked out that long, but I came out of my blackout at the worst time. Without a doubt, the worst time to come out of the blackout. When you're talking to the cops. You have no idea where you are in the conversation. And you can't ask any questions, like, what are we doing? You can't ask that, you know? So you gotta figure out why they stopped me, what have I told them, what have I given them? You gotta figure all that out without asking any questions. I got turned from out of the black. I finally figured out that one of my driver's licenses. I didn't have a driver's license. They took that fee you gave me guys earlier, right? So I told the guy, it's over there. I changed pants over there. I left my pants. I will bring it to you in the morning. They were not going to go get it. Arrested me. And this time they're mad because I couldn't even bond out. See, I knew the system. Like, y'all know the system. I'm like, what you get arrested for? What do you do? You arrested? What do you do? You plead not guilty, right? Not guilty. And then you get it back then. And you're going to hate. You newcomer is going to hate this when I tell you this. Back then, the fee for DWI in Utah was $250. And the attorney cost $250, so $500 you can fix it. So then the attorney, you get out, or get out of the OR, go to the OR, or get out, pay. I think the biggest fine bond I was posted was $50. And then you get an attorney, and you still do this today, you still postpone, right? Get that court date come up, they postpone. Just push that court date out at least a year. Finally, when the attorney says, no more postponing, go to court tomorrow, be there 10 a.m. You're going to be shown the day before court, move. I didn't want to cry, I just moved. And so they were mad. They said that this is against the law, not to show. It's failure to appear. I didn't know that was a new charge. Failure to appear. Oh, it's failure to appear. I didn't know it was against the law. There's no word on it. You don't come back. You're going to go to court. So I'm in lockup, can't get out, want out, don't like jail at all. Finally, a buddy of mine named Stan came down to see me. Stan, a lot of money, a little influence. Played ball with Stan. We grew up together from fifth grade on. And he said, okay, I've talked to some friends. They'll let you out. But the only way they'll do that is that they release you into my custody. The only way I'm going to do that is you promise me you go to treatment because you're sick. You need help. And I said, oh, Stan, bless you. You are so right. I don't know, but I go down to these bars, it's those women in the bar. They make me buy them those drinks. And I don't want to drink alone, so I drink with them. And I get drunk, and I may have a little bit of alcoholism in me, not much. I need help, I can't get any in here. He's, I'll get you out. So I get out of jail. I had no intention of quitting. I wasn't going to quit, didn't want to quit. I'm just getting out of jail. I had to stay with Stan the next day, supposed to the Yellow Pages. And where are you going to go? But you got to go to treatment. Looking at the Yellow Pages, a lot of treatment centers in 81. I thought this one place that I didn't come in for all treatment. Guy says, do you have an insurance? No, I hadn't worked 3.5 years. Got my insurance. She said, this was in 81. She says, $12,000 in 81. I said, hell, I don't want to stay all year. Don't you have a little treatment? That's a little treatment, really. Come one place, they wanted $18,000. I was so frustrated. I said, honey, listen, if I had $18,000, I wouldn't need your damn treatment. That would solve any problem I got. When I called this woman, Joanne, I said, I need control treatment. She said, okay. And I said, I don't have any insurance. She said, okay. I said, how much? She said, well, when you check in, you get room, board, and therapy, both individual and group therapy. And it's $9 a day. We get some aid from the state. And what we do when you check in, we apply for food stamps. Most of the bill is food. So we apply the food stamps to your bill, and that's how it's bring it down. And then we get some state aid, which helps bring it down. In fact, if you do chores around here, we give you, we'll even pay $1.50 cash. You can buy cigarettes. Cigarettes were $1 a pack out of the vending machine back there. And she said, it's $9 a day. You can apply the $1.50 to the bill if you want. It's, you know, $6.50, $7. I couldn't believe it. I said, how long is your waiting list? There's other places that want 12, 18,000. They have 30 to 60 waiting lists. She said, we haven't been for a night. Oh, don't really need to come tonight. Feeling pretty good right now. I don't really need to come tonight. She said, I think you need to come tonight. I said, I'm a consumer here. I got my rights. You know, they got bargaining. It's $9 in room board therapy. They can't fill their bed. She's high pressure. She needed to get me to come in down there. I said, honey, you make a reservation for Saturday. You just forget this whole damn deal. So she made it for Saturday, been in the ring, stayed to stand. Saturday, came and drove down there, parked in the parking lot, watched it all morning. Those guys going in and out of it, in and out. I want to see what kind of person would go to a $9 a day jitter joint. Those guys going there, they were alcoholics. You can tell, look at that guy. He's an alcoholic. No one is going, look at him. He's an alcoholic. You can tell, look at him. They don't look like y'all. Y'all do not look like alcoholics. The guys going there, needed to go there. They're alcoholics. I wasn't an alcoholic. But it fit my budget, so I checked in. Nothing happened. Got my room. It was fine. Sunday was my first exposure to Alcoholics Anonymous. Two guys from outside came in, chaired the meeting. They brought a meeting to the recovery center. Two guys taught. I didn't know the thing those two guys said. I'm watching everybody else. It was 36 of us, all men, sitting around round tables in the lunchroom. And these two guys talked for a while. Then listened to the thing and said, I'm a real chameleon. Sit back and figure out who's who in this group. Who's the rich guy? Who's the crazy guy? Who's the guy with all the muscle? Who's the guy with all the power? Who's in charge? You know, I got to figure out who's who in that group and where I fit in. That's what I do. So these two guys got through talking. They finally started on their discussion meeting. First, they introduced themselves. Said, my name's Jim B. I'm alcoholic. I'll pass. So he said, my name's Joe S. I'm an alcoholic. I'll pass. I found it real quick. But they do an AA, they give their first name, last initial, admit to the group you're alcoholic, and then pass. There's something magical. If you admit to this group you're an alcoholic, it's like magic. They'll just take that burden of alcoholism off your shoulder. If you're civil. That must be the deal. They had it written on the wall, admitted your power over alcohol. It's got to be the deal. It got to me. I did it right. So my name is John A. I'm an alcoholic. I'll pass. Nothing happened. I guess Alcoholics Anonymous is for really simple-minded people. If this is the best thing they got. It ain't for me. I'm not going to quit anyway. I'm just doing treatment. I was on Sunday, my first exposure day. So Monday was, I got to meet my counselor, first meeting with my counselor, Dale, lovely lady, 2-hour consultation with Dale. She wanted me to stay 2 months. 2 months. Dale. Dale, I've been here all weekend. I'm talking to these guys, they're alcoholics. I believe them, they are alcoholics. I don't know whether I'm an alcoholic or not. I may have a little bit of alcoholism in me, not a lot. But I'm too busy. I can't stay. I'm too busy. Can't stay 2 months. He said, you're busy? I said, I'm busy. Yes, I'm busy. Busy guy. She asked for papers and says, where were you working? I'm not working, Dale, but I'm busy. Metro about alcoholics. Alcoholics are the most busy and poor people who are in the meeting. Go to the meeting Monday. It's a business day. It's a work day. Guy's got nothing to do all day long, but get to the meeting, and he's late. He said, where have you been? Oh, hell, I've been busy. I don't know what we do, but we're busy doing it, right? So I said, I'll give you 2 weeks, Dale. So give me the material you're going to study during that 2 months. I'll read ahead. Give me pop quizzes if you want, because I'm leaving in 2 weeks. Because I'm not going to quit drinking. That's not what I'm doing there. I'm just doing treatment time. Treatment time is better than jail time. Figure I'll do 2 weeks of treatment time, get out of there, get back to rehab, get off my life. But I'm not going to quit drinking, but I'll fulfill my obligation to stand. So she listened to all that stuff, and I says, well, better hurry with you. I said, damn right. That was on Tuesday, on Monday. Tuesday's alcoholic education. Or Tuesday was group therapy. Love group therapy. That's fun. Wednesday's alcoholic education seminar. Just showing a movie. Don't like movies about drug addiction, alcoholism. They're bored, even dad don't like them. So I'm sitting there, all my pride, all my ego, all my contempt, prepared not to like the movie. And the name of the movie was shown, I'll Quit Tomorrow. I'm watching it. It tore me apart. I couldn't believe it. It's like I related to everything in that movie. It's like they made a movie of my life, and they were showing it to the group. I drank the way the guy drank. I drank the way the guy drank. I acted the way the guy acted. I dressed the way the guy dressed. I talked the way the guy talked. I did everything that guy did.
And as it related to that, I knew the gig was up. That was my moment of clarity when I knew I was an alcoholic. Why was that my moment? I had no idea. But I knew the gig was up. What happened to me that night is I quit looking for that definition. What's an alcoholic? How do you know you're an alcoholic? What is an alcoholic? Later found out in AA. See, AA does not have a definition of an alcoholic. I couldn't define an alcoholic for you tonight. What we have in AA is a description. So you can't argue with the description. You can argue with the definition. That's why Webster got 10 definitions for every word. But you can't argue with the description. The most powerful tool God's given Alcoholics Anonymous is our description of the alcoholic. Because it's that description as the alcoholic relates to it that seems to have the power to literally strip everything that separates the alcoholic from himself. And I could see me that light like I'd never seen me. I could see me in that light like my wife saw me. I could see me in that light like my mom saw me. Even so, I could see me. And I knew the gig was up. Most powerful tool we have is that. Think how important that description is. Two-thirds of our book, two-thirds of the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, is what? Descriptions and all those stories, right? Why they put all those stories in there? Just to make the big book? No, because that description is that how it relates to it, seems to have the power to restrip it in this sector to alcohol from the south. And I knew the gig was up. I wasn't happy about it. Sometimes you'll hear from the podium that people say how grateful they were and what the problem was and how home they felt when they ate it. That was not my experience. I was scared. I cried all night. I mean, my whole life just changed. My God, I'm an alcoholic. What am I going to do now? I'm an alcoholic. Oh, my God. I got to wait like a job. I'm not going to function in the world. I don't know how to function. I cried all night. And I stayed there 6 weeks. Couldn't stay 2 months. Too busy. When I left, they said, now you need aftercare. A very important part of recovery is aftercare. So they gave me intergroup. You're too far away. 800 miles. You can't come back for 3 times a week for aftercare. So you call AA for your aftercare. They gave me intergroup's phone number. So I drove back to Reno. I knew 2 weeks when I drove back to Reno. I know I'm alcoholic. I don't want to drink. I know that. Same thing was, I know AA has nothing to offer. I mean, come on, man. You go there, you give your first name, last initial, admit your alcoholism, and then pass. Wow. How excited is this life going to be, you know? But I don't want to drink. So first day I'm back in town, I got interviewed with the phone number. I called interview. He answers the phone. I said, my name is John A., and I'm an alcoholic. He goes, well, I'm Bruce. I'm an alcoholic. John, what do you do for me? I said, well, listen, I just got a treatment. So like, see, I'm living here in Reno, and, you know, I wanted to call and report in. But hey, your computer, you're not sure how to tell you to appear on your screen. He said, well, I'm glad you're here. And I said, yeah. He said, do I go to a meeting? I said, well, yeah, I'd probably go to a meeting tonight. It's Thursday. I'll go to a meeting tonight. Probably want to meet me. He said, well, I'm not going to go, but there's a men's stag, Hope Riverside Casino, 830, 34th year. I don't know where it is. I'll meet you early so we can, I'll go early so we can meet. So I'm not going to go. I said, well, call them and tell them John A's coming to their meeting. They'll be there. Don't worry about it. We'll be all set. So I show up 20 after 8, early. I call, made a reservation. Guy did not call and tell him John A is coming to me. My first resentment in AA. Nobody says, that must be John A. Here's your coffee. Here's your chair. No, just some guy smoking cigarettes, drinking coffee. I sat down, I got my coffee. An old guy named Red chaired me. Red talked a while, then Mr. Thing Red said, because I got to figure out who these guys are. Who's who in this group, you know? Right after talking, started on a discussion meeting. These guys, it was so bad, they couldn't even introduce themselves. Right. Some of them did not give their last initial. So my name is John, I'm alcoholic. Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Yeah, supposed to give your last initial. Guy did not give the last initial. Some of them gave their last name and said, my name is John Allard, I'm alcoholic. Oh, my God. First and last name. What does he think anonymous means? What does he think that means? Oh my, I could look him up in the phone book now. They talked, I don't know what they talked about, nothing we talked about in treatment. It became clear to me, these guys have not been to treatment. So it got to me, I thought I'd help. I said, my name is John A., I'm an alcoholic. And I qualified, I said, listen, guys, I just got a treatment, so I said, how much do I have the latest, most up to date? Medical, psychological information. Second resentment, Red cut me off, said, thank you, John. Well, let's go. That son of a bitch was jealous. I know stuff you don't know. That's his problem right there. As many guys come up and shut my hands, hope you come back. I'll be back. They need me down there now. They need me. Now, I don't know where I live. I said 90 meetings in 90 days. I never heard 90 meetings. I did one meeting a week. Every Thursday, that would mean staff. Now, they'll not let me share, but I keep going back. If I'm walking in the red, red will die, and I get to share. I'm just not living. So I'm down there. And one of the things they told me that, now Chuck Henry and I always say, there are men as my teacher. Some people teach me what to do. Some people teach me what not to do. Please keep in mind, most of what I'm going to share is what not to do. Okay? Because I've done this deal all wrong. I don't worry. I never heard 90 meetings, 90 days. I did one meeting a week. And I'm about out of it. I'm about out of it. And I'm down there at my men's staff meeting on Thursday night. And they said, now tomorrow, it was New Year's Eve. Or Christmas Eve. It was Christmas Eve. And they said, now tomorrow's Christmas Day. You got nowhere to go for Christmas dinner. You go to the Dryers Club. Skid Row put us on less. Free Christmas dinner. Alan's putting on. It'd be great. I had nowhere to go Christmas Day. So I go to the Dryers Club. They're still there on Wells Street in Reno. Ate. It was good. Great meal. I'm sitting there. I'm not bothering anybody. Bring a cup of coffee. Smoke a cigarette. Mind my own business. Old time. Spotted me. You know when they spot you, I swear to God, their eyes go. And they start to salivate. I swear to God, they salivate. I was trying to get up and start walking over there. Oh, come on, don't come over here. I like cool guys. This guy is not cool. Fat guy, short, fat guy, funny hair, big nose. Nothing cool about this guy at all. So I'm coming over here and come introduce himself. His name's Don. Hi, Don. Because he's the coordinator of intergroup. I don't know what that is, but I thought, you know, I'm glad they found something for you to do. I'm talking to Don, and it became clear to me after just a few minutes, Don had not been to treatment. So I started to tell Don about all the stuff they're not going to talk about in my home group. He gets a funny look on his face. He says, would you like to go to a meeting with me tonight? And I said, oh, well, hell, Don, it's Friday. I go Thursday. And said, we got a meeting every night in Reno. And that short time I've been going to A, I heard something about spiritual. This is a spiritual program. Spiritual program. It's Christmas. Spiritual program. Yeah. I'm going to go twice this week. Won't hurt. So Don comes gets me. You got State Hospital. You got a meeting at State Hospital, 7 o'clock at 9 on Friday. We got State Hospital walking in the meeting. Give you a raffle ticket to that meeting. The raffle off of Big Buckler's Bill season, every meeting on Friday night. Walking women in that meeting. First meeting I've been to that had women in the meeting. I didn't know, did not know the little men. I met in a men's draft joint, men's stag meeting, got women in the meeting. I thought, why am I going first? I can come here Friday. It's my new home group, baby. Next Friday, back. So they, I don't want to talk about Sunday. Although I had a great mind, I read real fast and real long school, very good reader. I forgot to get a big book. No big book. You talked about the big one. Who talked? You did. You talked about the big book. Stealing the big one. You stole the big one. And I thought, I got a raffle ticket. I'm winning the book. It's Christmas Day. This is going to be God's gift to me on Christmas. The only gift I'm going to get is from God himself on Christmas Day. It'll be the big book of AA. I'm winning the book. I want to pray for the book. I want the book. Book's my book. I want the damn book now. Pray it hard. Then the meeting went to have the raffle off the big book. Third resentment out of my mama. Some old grade, like 25 years sober, wins my book. So what should win my book? I'm strolling, trying to get out of there. But a lady couldn't give me that book. That literally was the only Christmas gift I got that year. Was a big book of A. And took home that night and started reading it, studying it. Next day, Don called and wants to go to another meeting. Started calling me every day. Take me to the meeting. I don't want to go. I went to meet last night. What did I go tonight for? I need to go tonight. When last night? I didn't go tonight. I'm gonna stand him up. He'll come by. I'm gonna leave. This is before caller ID when I had to answer the damn phone. And but every day he's coming on the phone, taking me to a meeting. I don't want to go. I said, I'm leaving. I'm going to stand him up. I'm like, wait a minute. He's only got a cop in TNA. If you don't go, he's going to talk about you behind your back. You got to go show up with him or something. So I went to a meeting every day. Now, fascinating thing happened. I didn't have a sponsor then. I hadn't worked any steps. The only change in my life was I'm going to a meeting every single day. And a fascinating thing happened in my life. I not only feel better, but I feel good. And I haven't felt those two things at the same time in years. And all of a sudden, sobriety started putting on flesh and bones. And I started meeting other guys in AA, getting excited to go to, I started getting excited to go to this AA thing. And I felt like a little kid. Don would come by, pick me up. I felt like a little kid sitting in the passenger seat. He's driving the car. I said, Don, you think we can go get ice cream tonight?
We'll see.
So I'm going to meet him. See, then I'm starting to feel good about it, getting pumped up. I started going down to intergroup, hanging out with this guy I don't like. An intergroup. Meeting other alcoholic men in the intergroup. I'm down there. I'm excited about him. Down there a week later, it was New Year's Eve now. One of my men's stag meeting Thursday night, New Year's Eve. My intergroup, the phone rings. I grabbed the phone, being a service. Young kid named Glenn. Glenn's 17 years old, wants to know how to stay sober New Year's Eve. I said, why? Glenn, you're 17. It's New Year's Eve. We're here tomorrow. Big day for us tomorrow. Of course, he's in. Don grabs that phone away from me. When he passed the law, Senator Law, the rule, he had to have 6 months or more sobriety to answer the phone or intergroup. You know, put a big center, must have 6 months to answer. Big L. Don talked to me, not only did you give me his phone, but not give me my phone. But the next day, Don calls me and says, hey, Glenn stayed sober last night, wants to go to me. I was like, great, my first 12 step. I'm going to learn how to 12 step work. Don comes, gets to me. We go get Glenn, take Glenn out of state hospital. I got right in the big book. Went for Don, prepare Glenn A for AA. He's not preparing Glenn for AA. He's just driving the car. I'm not telling Glenn about it. Hell, I gotta do it all. So I start talking all about it. You're gonna love this man. You get women your very first meeting. Next week, without Don, I'll bring you back here. You don't want to back to school next week. When you get to do your raft, hang on the raft, hit. Then in the meeting, the raft off the big book or Bill Season, and if God loves you, you'll win the book. Don, that's it. Don just goes to me. You get to the meeting, the raft, they didn't sit down. I don't really talk about because I'm praying for Glenn. Come on, God, let Glenn win that book. Glenn can win the book after I prepared him like I have. It'll be proof God's working his life. Not that it really matters, but I would have, just say sober forever. And I would have 100% 12-step call success rate. I can write articles in the grapevine. How to have 100% 12-step. So I'm praying for Glenn to win the book. Come on, God, let Glenn win the book. And then the meeting went to have the raffle up the big book. I won the book. Don turned and says, see how that works? I said, yeah, I signed it, gave it to Glenn. That's where Glenn got his book. Okay? Glenn's sober today. Because I gave him a book. Now, that little experience early in my sobriety taught me how God works. God works through people. By working through people, see, it's always a win-win situation with God. Always, no losers, win-win with God. Always at least two winners when God works. I won the little lady won by bringing up a sheriff man. I won by being able to receive from her. A week later, two winners. I won by Sheriff Glenn, and Glenn won by being able to receive from me. Two winners. Win-win situation. Last time, Alcoholics Anonymous works. Alcoholics Anonymous is one alcoholic sharing with another. When that happens, it's a win-win deal. Two winners when that happens. See, I've told that story, I guess, in 41 and a half years. I think thousands of times I've told that story. Every time I tell a story, I remember that moment of clarity when I knew the gig was up. I'm convinced that all the series that are sober in AA and I have had that moment of clarity when you knew the gig was up. I'm equally convinced those who come to AA for a while and leave and after drinking and dying tonight, Saturday night, had that moment of clarity. What's the difference between those of us that are in here sober and those of us that are out there drinking? We both had that moment of clarity. We both had the miracle. What's the difference? I think what happens in Alcoholics Anonymous is really pretty simple. Black Lives Anonymous does is we keep that moment alive. We keep it alive. See, as I've shared my moment with you, what it was like and what happened, I remember like it happened yesterday. What have you thought of that? And when I'm on that side of the coin, one of y'all is up here, and you're sharing your moment of what it was like and what happened, and you're keeping your moment alive. By the way, isn't this the perfect program for people whose root problem is their selfish self-centered? Because when you're up here and you're remembering your moment and you're keeping your moment alive, I'm so self-centered, what am I thinking about? My moment, screw your deal. We keep that moment alive. And it only happens, that moment alive, keep that moment alive, it only happens when one alcoholic shares with another. That's the miracle. It doesn't happen when you share with your doctor. Your doctor doesn't need to hear it. I've got to hear about your moment. Doesn't happen when you share with your therapist. Your therapist does not need to hear. I need to hear about your moment, or I'm going to lose mine. What happens when you lose your moment? You take drunk. We keep that moment alive when one alcoholic shares with another. And that miracle is something that's just been entrenched in me. And you got to keep that moment alive. And the miracles just mount and mount and mount until you can't believe it. You know? I want to cover a couple miracles that go on in your life. Or you can't explain it. You can't explain it. You know? But we depend on it. Never forget, I was sitting there at Dallas, you know, with my home group at that time. I should have time. I got a few minutes. Yeah. Dallas was my home group at that time. Big group. We'd have 60 celebrants on birthday night. 60 people picking up a chip. That thing would last 4 hours. You know? I'm 3 years sober. And I'm at birthday night, Saturday night. Went to 11 o'clock at night. I'm leaving to go home. Joanne's working for an investment. Joanne grabs me and she says, hey, a little lady from San Antonio called. Her son's going to commit suicide. She can't get up here. She wants to know if we'll go help her son. You want to take this 12-step call? And I said, let me call her first. I call her on the phone. She was crying her eyes out. She said, I can't get up here quick enough. My son called me. He's been drinking for 2 weeks. He's real messed up, and he's got a gun. He's going to put a bullet in his head tonight. I can't get up there. Can you go save my son? It's a four-hour drive for San Antonio. I said, what's his address? She gave me his – I asked him for his phone number. What's his phone number? She gave me his phone number. I called him on the phone. I told him who I was. I said, you want some help? He said, yeah, I need some help. No, I'm not going to make it. Been drinking and drugging. Haven't slept for 2 weeks. Messed up. Need some help. I said, give me your address. We'll come see it. He said, that's the problem, man. I can't tell you my address. Haven't slept. I'm so screwed up. I can't even think. I don't know what my address is. You know? And you'll never find me. I did. You'll never find me. I can't tell you how to get here. I'm too screwed up. I said, we'll find it. No, you'll never find me. It's a little street, 2 blocks. It's not even on Maxwell. It's a brand new street, 2 blocks long. I've only been there for less than a year. Wasn't on the Maxwell yet. He said, never find it. I'm just going to end it. I said, give me your damn address. We'll find you. He lived on Dome Street. Now, I have told this story for 38 years. Every month in Dallas, Texas, when I do the steps. I do them every month somewhere. I told this story every month for 38 years. That's thousands and thousands of drunks I've told this story to. And I always ask, does anybody know where Dome Street is? Nobody's ever raised their hand. 2 blocks long, brand new street. It's actually in Addison. Nobody knows where it is. Out of thousands of drunks I've asked over a 38-year period. But see, I know where Dome Street is. I know where. I have a client that lives on Dome Street. He don't live on Dome Street. He is literally the next door neighbor of the guy making the phone call. I said, I don't know where you are. You live next door to Tim. He said, how do you know Tim? So I'll be there in 10 minutes. That Tom, a guy sponsoring, he made that. That's just a coincidence, isn't it? Kind of, you know the odds of that? The lady calls record of information, wants AA's phone number in Dallas, Texas. Any other night, every group is closed. But we're there till 11 o'clock Saturday night because of birthday night. And for some reason, out of the 150 groups in Dallas, Texas, that operator picks Dallas North. And Dallas North, we got 200 people in attendance that meeting, 60 celebrants. And Joanne, working the front desk, picks a guy with 3 years sober to make a suicide 12-step call. That's just coincidence. God didn't do that. I'm a gambler, right? Well, y'all want to bet on that. That'll happen a lot. That's just coincidence, right? God didn't do that. You have to put just the right person at just the right time with just the right information since God works through people. Just coincidence. And we're going down to California a couple, a little while after that. Go to the airport, this is before 9/11. You just get on the plane, I'm walking into the thing. Big sign says the plane's been delayed an hour. That flight got engine problems. Come back an hour later, said planes can't be fixed. Been canceled, but there's a flight going two gates down, 17 seats on standby. You're going to put your name on the list. Well, 100 of us run down and put a name on the list, right? Go out to California. Out of 100 people on the list, I'm the 17th one to get on the boat. I'm the second to the last one to get on the plane. Get on the plane, walk back. This one, you can smoke on planes. Go back to the non-smoking section. You got a seat next to the window. Right on the aisle is this good-looking guy in a red dress. God is working in my life. So I sit down. It's a bad seat. Chatterbox. I have not had a coffee with this woman, you know. Finally, she shuts up. The plane takes off. She pulls out a needle. She's needlepoint. She's needlepoint in the serenity prayer. I said, my turn. What are you doing? Oh, no, I'm just needlepoint. I know you're needlepoint. What is that? You're needlepoint. She's embarrassed. She didn't worry. See, I'm just needlepoint. What are you needlepoint? What is that? What is that anyway? She holds up. She says, well, they call it the serenity prayer. I said, oh, man. Are you one of those Jesus freaks? She says, no. But I'm trying to be spiritual. I said, no kidding. So, yeah. She, and now she's really near. Her hands are sweaty. She's going 100 miles an hour. I said, you do that fast. She says, oh, yeah. She says, I'm real compulsive. Said, no kidding. So, yeah. Finally, I better stop this poor guy before she breaks a finger. I said, stop. Just stop. I said, that's the serenity prayer. You're trying to lead a spiritual life and you have a little compulsive personality. Can I just ask you, are you a friend of Bill W's? Boy, she stopped me down her thing. She said, yeah. Are you? I said, no. She gets a blank look on her face. I said, he got it. You're like a sober. Yeah. Come to find out, this gal had 2 months sobriety. And this was her first trip. She was going, got a new job, was going to San Diego for training. And she also had her first drunk from the night before. She thought that was a premonition she was going to get drunk. So we had a great 3-hour meeting going out there. You know, I told her about drunk dreams. And I told her about some of mine. And she didn't have any friends out there. So I gave her some phone numbers of people I know in San Diego. And she's crying. And I'm crying. We're having a great little individual meeting there. She says to me, she says, can you believe this? I was sitting up there in the non-smoking sessions. I've been trying to quit smoking. And they announced that we could move seats because they were going to some standby only. We could move if we wanted to. And I decided to smoke. So I moved back here. Can you believe that God would have me move back here and just sit by you? And I said, oh, hell, honey, listen. He canceled my old plane to hit me from over here and sit by you. That's just proof. The guy didn't get a deal, huh? He's not going to cancel planes. He made a 12-step call. That's just trying to put just the right person at just the right time with just the right information since God works through people. Amen. That's just coincidence. 1990, I'm in Del Rio, Texas. Didn't want to go. A little teeny border conference call, town, or the conference, about seven. There are more people here than attend that conference. There are about 70 people attend that conference. They asked me, you're ahead of time, I've committed to go. And that week, that month, or 2 months, I've been busy. I've gone every week. And I was tired. And the problem was I had to drive. And it's like an 11-hour drive from Dallas, Texas, Del Rio, right on the border. And I didn't realize, I called my sponsor, man, I said, 12-hour drive down there, back. I'm going to drive 22 hours to make an hour talk. I said, they can get some. He said, no, you've committed. You need to go. Keep all your yeses. Keep all your yeses. So I go. Reluctantly, but I go. Keep my commitment. I drive down there. I get down there Friday. Saturday, I meet this girl. Meet this gal, Dolly E. on her name badge, from Connecticut. I said, Dolly. I said, what are you doing in Del Rio, Texas, from Connecticut? I'm going to see my husband. He's in the military. He's in the Navy. Been on a cruise, and he came back, and he's in San Diego, and we drove down here to the city. Brought the kids down. We got married 5 years sober in AA. We stopped in Del Rio here, spent the night. We're going to go on, but we decided to spend the day here. Just came to think about it. We went across the border, buy some souvenirs, some Mexican souvenirs, spend the night here, and go on in the morning. I called AA. They told me about this conference, so I came to the conference. I said, well, great. Welcome to Texas. I spoke Saturday night. She heard me talk. She came up after my talk. She said, so let me get this straight. You grew up in Utah. I said, yeah. She says, you have any relatives in Orem, Utah? I said, well, I grew up in Orem, Utah. She said, are you related to Mark and Betty Joe? And I said, well, they're my parents. And then Dottie starts to cry. And she tells me she's married to Tommy. and tell what her last name is. We're big on the last initial, right? Tell them what her last name is. See, Tommy's my first cousin. He's 3 years older than me. We grew up ripping and running together. We got out of high school. He joined the Navy. I went to college. Hadn't seen or heard from him in 18 years. And she was on her way to see him. We don't have him back at port with the kids to the divorce room. Because Tommy was drunk. He got drunk and he couldn't get sober. He had a real God issue. We grew up the same guy, a real God issue. And that cracked the door. We made a 12-step call on Tommy. And today, Dottie and Tommy have 49 years marriage.
Wow.
He got sober in 92. Been sober since 92. You know? That's just coincidence, isn't it? God ain't gonna do that. He's not gonna put just the right person at just the right time. You know the answer to that? She's in Connecticut. He's in San Diego. I'm in Dallas, and we meet in Del Rio, Texas, because she decided to spend the day. Nobody spends the day in Del Rio. I meet a gal married my cousin for 8 years. I haven't seen him for 18 years. That's just a coincidence, isn't it? God ain't gonna do that. He's gonna put just the right person, just the right time, just the right information. Since God works through people, just a coincidence, isn't it? Now, I share that story because I know that there are people in here tonight. They're in a lot of pain. Doesn't really seem to matter whether you've been sober 40 years or 30 days. Sometimes sobriety is like you crawl over the edge of the precipice, you're looking into the abyss, and you don't know. You know, does God really love me? Or is that just AA quote and rhetoric we talk about? Because you can't do anything about our problem. We're screwed. It's just AA quoting rhetoric or God really. Yeah, I believe in God, but he's not personally going to help me. He's not personally going to take care of me. He created the world and the universe. He's not personally going to involve my life, is he? You know? Now, if that's where you are, then you need to know that tonight, more than ever, I know God loves us. Totally. He knows your name. He is totally committed. And we'll go to any length to see you get this deal. I used to think that was a one-way street. I used to think I had to be willing to go to any length to get sober. I know today, God will go to any length to see you get this deal. And if you have to borrow that God, and you can find a power of your own that will solve your problem, then do it. God borrowed yours while it's finding them. And I don't know, I can't tell you when God's going to help you. I don't know. But I can tell you exactly how he's going to help you. I don't know exactly what he's going to do. He's going to put just the right person at just the right time with just the right information because God works through people. And I love y'all. Thank you very much.